All right, we're recording. Welcome to the Aries Working Group call for the 24th of July. This call is recorded, mostly so I can remember to do it, and we post them afterwards. So if you happen to miss one, you can come back and see what happened and skip the boring parts. Awesome. Please remember the Hyperledger Code of Conduct and the antitrust policy. Don't do illegal stuff and don't do bad stuff to each other. As far as announcements goes, there is an SSI incubator that has been created by Hard Yaka and the Sovereign Foundation. 180,000 is available for those accepted into the program. The applications are due in 7 days. I apologize for not mentioning this on last week's call. So SSIincubator.com. If you are interested in applying, or you have, or you know someone that is, please spread the word. Stephen, do we need to, should we keep this announcements up on mobile agents? Is that useful?
Well, the MOU was released yesterday, finally. So the idea here is it's not just a random collaboration, but we actually have some structure around it. It just took us a while to get the paperwork in place for that. So the that is out there. There was an announcement John Jordan put out on a number of places yesterday that talked about the structure of the engagement. So basically, we're looking for organizations that have mobile agents that are ready to be released, in a suitable form for use by a relatively small audience. In the fall timeframe, September, October timeframe.
Awesome. Do you have a link that you could add?
Yeah, let me get that, and I'll put that in. The MOU itself is out there, so I'll update the note in this as we go.
Awesome. I'm going to pull the Moving Hypes thing since that's done. And the Aries SDK repos have been created. If you are interested in working on one, what we'd like you to do, or if you've been set as the maintainer, what we'd like you to ask you to do is create a PR with a README that has just even some basic information with plans and who's working on it and everything else. That way, when people go to the repo, they can actually find out what's going on. So even if you don't yet have code to push, but you are interested in working on something, then please go just add a basic README to that repo, and that will help avoid confusion when people go looking. So related meetings, yesterday the BCGov team did a Aries Cloud Agent Python deep dive that was fantastic. There is both a recording and slides that you can view that were used in that presentation. And that will help substantially with an understanding of how it's organized and the capabilities of it. And so big thanks to the BCGov team for doing that. We got a plus one from Sam Smith in the comments as well. Any follow-up comments from that or questions about the Aries Cloud Agent deep dive? Awesome. Thanks.
Have another one and cover all the stuff that wasn't covered in the first one.
What I think we should do is collect questions that we'd like answered. And that way because I think Stephen, you went through most of what you had prepared, right? And everything else.
Yeah. I think we got through a lot of what we wanted, but as questions come in, I think that's a good way to handle it. The only thing possibly was, if a afternoon U.S. Session would be useful for folks to do the same content, or do we just go with the, I think it sounds like the recording is sufficient.
I think the recording is pretty fantastic, but I think that we should collect questions that people have so that we can either do a follow-on or answer them in some other forum, and that would be really useful. But I think the same content over again, I think the recording is probably more useful for that because people can do it whenever they like to. We had an excellent turnout. There were 46 people in the call, if I counted correctly. So it was very well attended and lots of folks interested, so that was very cool. Thanks again for doing that. Any updates from Ursa? It's okay if there isn't. Lots of notes added here under the user experience working group. This is fantastic. It looks like there's been some progress made. Does anyone want to give us a summary?
Yeah, maybe I quickly, Robert here. So I added information about the communication channel, which is the official place where actually all the discussion will take the place. So it's a mailing list. And then the charter, which is right now in the review process. So everyone is welcome to comment and provide a feedback on that. And of course, the recording or the minutes from the last call, which you can find on the Google Drive. So overall, as I said last time, basically the user experience within the decentralized economy, covering DIDs, self-sovereign identity, digital wallets, and so forth. Probably the meeting will be once a month, and in those places you will get more information.
That is fantastic. Thank you for reporting back on that. And for links in the meeting notes is fantastic. Semantic Working Group, I see a recording link here. Any brief updates?
Yeah, I can comment on that as well. So the last call was kind of interesting in the context of the progress with the ODCI, so Overlay Data Capture Architecture. We are bootstrapping a pilot with Novartis for specific forms within the risk management processes. So you can find the details within this recording. And as well, we bootstrapped a discussion about the decentralized global economy specifically in the consequences of using ODCI and services which are purpose-based. So everyone welcome to take a look at it. If you have more comments or questions, just let me know.
Perfect, and thank you for summarizing those, Robert. We appreciate it. Work updates: Aries SDK or Aries Cloud Agent Python. Can we get a brief update on progress there this week?
Basically, we're focused right now. The team's focused on making Aries Cloud Agent work with the production use we have, which is OrgBook and an issuer sending credentials to OrgBook. So we're getting into subtle things like if we're storing the credential in two places and the non-wallet one fails, how do we handle that? So we've extended the credential a little bit for that. Also working on right now the command line options and sort of dividing them up. Covered this a bunch yesterday, but covering the command line options so you can do things related to establishing a wallet and things like that independent of running it. So you can, so when you're in production scenarios, you can start by configuring, setting up and configuring a wallet. And then whenever you run, for instance, containers that use that wallet, they don't have to have all the same parameters defined. And so you get a more secure configuration. So those are the main things we're working on right now. So it's really trying to get it running in production.
Awesome. Thanks for the report. And then anything about Indie SDK? There's been we've had not yet results to report necessarily, but there's been lots of thoughts and conversations and things going on about the Indie SDK migration to Ursa, or the Ursa, sorry, Aries. I'm crossing my projects. Any feedback on that or any announcements? Okay, there's lots of ongoing work. I know that that there's folks at Evernym and at the Sovereign Foundation and everything else working on that, and things are in progress. So if you are interested, please reach out on the Aries SDK channel is probably the best place to do that. Mention that you're interested in what you'd like to be interested in, and we can go ahead and get you looped into the conversations and the work that's going on there. Any announcements, work updates, anything else that we didn't cover before we get to the topic of our agenda today?
Apologize, a minute late. Next week's morning Aries meeting A, we're going to cover the threading model for the future libAries, and that should be interesting.
Excellent. So if you care about the migration of Indy to Aries and how threading has been handled in the past, that is a conversation that we want you in so that we can talk together and learn and come up with the best option to bring the relevant Indy SDK or libindy goodness into libraries. So perfect. Thank you, Richard.
So I'm down in New Zealand now, but I do want to be a part of that conversation. I'm planning to just watch a recording. Should I reach out to Sergey directly if I have questions or anything?
Yeah, that sounds good. And if lots of people that usually attend the afternoon call would like us to cover that in the afternoon call, then we will do that. Absolutely.
Okay.
And Kyle, now that you're down under, we just basically expect you to be 24 hours. So forget that sleep thing.
Yeah, well, I'm not liking this whole 7 a.m. thing.
I was thinking the two in the morning call might be the perfect time to get Kyle's engagement, the 2 a.m. New Zealand time.
Yeah, good idea.
Yeah, do we have an offset for Kyle's standard time?
I was about to ask.
Yeah. I mean, I could say New Zealand, but just because Kyle's in New Zealand doesn't mean this Kyle's standard time has aligned with New Zealand standard time. So,
it needs to be the other way around, you know.
I think Kyle would like that. It'd be a wild country. Awesome. So, yes, that will be an engaging conversation. Any other announcements or things? Okay, we have some important RFCs up for discussion. But before we did that, I wanted to do a demo of a project I've been working on that I've been calling an Aries Toolbox. Cloud agents in particular tend to run headless, right? There are these things, you run them, they have wallets, you interact with them in various ways. But I've been thinking a lot about future use cases for not only developers of agents, but also for the sysadmin folks who get to end up running these things or configuring them, and in the types of needs they have. We've done some exercises inside the Sovereign Foundation as well on what it would take to set up an agent to represent an organization, and we had a lot of things that came out of that, and one of the solutions that I'm proposing, I'm gonna have to stop share to reshare here. One of the solutions that that I've been working on, and I've got a first early iteration to show. There we go. I have to share my entire desktop because of the nature of this. It's something that I'm calling the Aries Toolbox. This is an Electron app, which is developed in JavaScript and can be built to run on Windows, Mac, and Linux. The code obviously for this is intended to be open source, but we don't want everyone to have to check out the code and build it in order to use the tool. It's kind of an agent, but it's not really designed for normal agent functionality, but rather to give you a way to interact with other agents from a developer or sysadmin type of a way. And so the other agent that I'm going to use here, I'm going to use the Faber agent that is part of the demo here. And you can use Play with Vaughn in order to launch one of these. And so what I've done is I've already launched one running just these commands here, and that's what's actually sitting in this particular location. So what I'm going to do here for the demo is I'm going to grab the invitation URL. The Aries Toolbox is not quite a static agent. It is capable of updating its own local location, but it's more of an edge agent than it is a cloud agent, meaning there's no internal routing. So in order to support this, the agent that you're talking with needs to support return route, which the Aries Cloud Agent Python does. So I'm going to paste in the invitation URL, and I'm going to hit connect, and then it's going to give me sort of like an address book thing here. The idea here is there might be multiple agents that you interact with, and this would give you an easy way to interact with them, to kind of keep a list. You know, if I'm a sysadmin for Acme Corp, I might have several agents that I administer, and this would give me sort of a quick way to jump back into them. What it did when I pasted the invitation is it went through the whole step of the connection protocol, and the Aries Cloud Agent is configured currently in the setup to accept inbound connections using the connection protocol. So I'm going to hit connect, and it's going to open up a new window here. I'm hoping it opens up a new window. This is going to be a really short demo. Okay, here we go. So this window here just represents this Faber agent that I'm connecting to. New window is important because you might be interacting with multiple agents at a time, and you might be able to interact with them or test interactions between them using this. So right now it's pretty lightweight. But I have a couple of tabs here that I'll go through. The first one here is that I use the feature discovery protocol, and this is the answer out of this. So here's all the features or all the protocols that this agent is willing to speak to me. We haven't fully developed out roles here, but we can, as we improve that, that's in the protocol. So this will just display to you what actually happened there. Eventually I'll expand this so that you can actually issue your own custom query for returning the protocols, but as now it runs it with a star, which basically requests all of the things that it supports. The theory here is not only to make it useful for you as a developer to understand the protocols that that particular agent supports, but this Aries toolbox itself can enable or disable certain UI elements that correspond to specific things. For example, basic message here is indicated as a protocol, which could enable the basic message tab or however we end up organizing this functionality inside of this the toolbox. And that way you can hide things or at least indicate that they're not supported for that particular agent and automatically enable the things that are, which will help when you have agents with custom protocols or things like that as well. The message history maintains a history of all the messages sent and received with this agent. It kind of just shows one level by default, but you can see here that this was the disclose message as part of protocol discovery that actually indicates the data as it came back. So if you want to see messages that are actually transferring back and forth between the toolbox and the agent that you're interacting with, they're all visible here. You can clear them if it gets too long. So here is this was a message that was automatically sent when I opened the window that sends the query message. And you can see here the query was a star. And then I've also requested a return route over this connection so that I can receive messages back to the Aries toolbox, even though I don't have an endpoint registered with that agent. So there's the message history. Another really cool one is compose. And the idea here is that as you're testing things, you can compose a message here of any format that you want. I've pre-populated mostly just for the demo here with a trust ping. And then you can adjust everything that you want about this, if you wanted to change a value or anything else. This will send the message as is. The way the code is written, and there should be some documentation here on the screen, it adds the ID for you, and it also appends the return route handling for you on the message that you send. So it does doctor the message slightly before transmission to make sure that it works the way that it needs to. So I'm going to hit send here. And right now I haven't decided what ought to show below this. I should probably show the threaded response from any messages that are sent. But at this point, you can go see stuff in the history. So here's the message that I sent. And you can see that in addition to what I had in the message, an ID is present and the transport return route stuff has been specified there as well. And then here is the response that we received back. You can see that the thread ID matches the message ID of the original message. And then it has assigned its own message to that. And you can see the data that goes back and forth. So these are kind of developer-y tools. I also implemented quick support for basic message. This might be useful, for example, you'll see here in a second, this Faber demo is automatically configured. When you send it a basic message, then it actually auto responds with a thing. And if you are tuning auto response or something like that, then this is adjusting something. This is an easy way to tell that. So if I send a message, you can see the message that I sent, and then this is the text of the message that came back as configured. And if you're watching on the screen behind here, there you can see that this actually happened there as well. And then over in the message history, of course, you can see that I have sent this basic message with the content of hello, and here's the message that actually came back. But you can interact with it through this interface if you're interacting with that agent. So in this case, just to clarify, the toolbox is acting as an agent and then connecting to this Faber agent, and then is using presents some user interface that you can use to interact with the Faber agent or any other agent that you connect with. So that's the demo. Are there any questions or thoughts?
So if you run this, let's say you run like the favorite agent locally on your desktop, do we call that a cloud agent then? Or do we call it an edge agent?
The cloud agent has a lot more to do with its capabilities rather than anything else. So I use the, you know, this Docker run one in the cloud, but most of my testing for this I've done with an agent locally on my desktop. So a cloud agent is more about the design of the overall software, not necessarily where it's deployed. Because I was deploying it on a on my local desktop, and I did not configure any way to route messages in from the internet generally, it doesn't have the public endpoint, which is normally what we associate with a cloud agent. But this actually will connect. The goal of this is to actually connect with any agent. So it's possible, for example, that you could take an invitation generated by another edge agent, like a phone app that uses routing in order to get its messages, plug it into the invitation here and actually generate a connection and then send messages through the routing, of course, directly to the phone app. So this is designed to be a toolbox for use with any agent, depending on the protocols that it supports, of course.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, I'm still stuck on that word, but I don't think we're going to solve that here. So I'll keep thinking because this introduces some new ideas.
Yes.
Yeah. That is totally awesome. Way to go. That is very cool.
One of the things I like about this is that in the Aries Cloud Agent Python, I'm stumbling for words here for a minute, but you have a driver app, right? The controller. And the controller's job is to be the one that adds personality to the agent. But that's designed to be like more of a long-term connection, and each agent will have one controller. And it struck me that if you're an administrator or you are someone that's interacting with you or a dev and you're just trying to test something, then having an easy way to support things like this, you know, be able to send it a basic message without having to actually code anything would be really, really useful. And so I see this as a really cool, you know, human-oriented tool that we can use to work with agents.
And to be clear, that's entirely a desktop app. Like the first screen you showed was a little, like it looks like when we have use Reflector and display our mobile app, but that's not a mobile app. That's just running on the desktop, right?
It's just a window, and you'll have to forgive two things. One is that I'm clearly not a UI designer. The second thing is—
Oh, it's brilliant. It's beautiful.
This is still pretty early, and so the code, which is in a repo of that's on my GitHub account right now, it hasn't been transferred. It needs some work. Part of this is that I've never developed an Electron before, and I've done Vue before, but not in the way that we're doing it here. So I've had to learn a lot along the way, and I've probably made some mistakes. So if this is sort of thing is interesting, and you'd like to work on it, then I would very much welcome help and guidance from people who know more of what they're doing around Electron and Vue than I am. So Electron, if you're unfamiliar, is actually used in a fair amount of things, most notably. Slack uses Electron in order to build their desktop apps. And you might be thinking that's a terrible example because Slack is such a resource hog. You'll notice that they had a blog on their technical blog post where they talked about how they did some internal refactoring in order to better optimize their app. Their refactoring didn't quit using Electron, it just changed the way they were using Electron and it got a lot more efficient. So the advantage here is you can code it in one code base and then people can easily, you know, we can build installable versions that people just download and install and they can just use it without having to get, you know, belly close to the code if they want. Okay, I'm not seeing the chat if stuff is happening there.
We're just dialoguing about Slack's refactoring because that's much more interesting than this stuff.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm not from the Slack engineering team. I just happened to see that. It is my goal that this ends up being, I've called this the Aries Toolbox. I'm welcoming suggestions for better names or other things like that. And then it is my intention to transfer this as soon as it logically makes sense over to the Hyperledger organization inside of GitHub so that it's a regular Aries repository.
It feels like an agent browser, like you would like a browse the ledger, you're browsing the capabilities of an agent.
A little bit. So one of the, we in our exercise at the Sovereign Foundation, one of the things that we ran into was that the command line tools aren't always as easy to use as we would like from like a register, a schema, or something like that. And so the intention here is that if we have the ability to interact with the agent in order to make that happen, that we can present a nice UI in this tool, and then it's an easy thing to have happen. I would love it so that in the future, someone could just deploy the Ares Cloud Agent Python, and then as long as they were following something with a controller or other sort of expected behavior, they could do the rest of the administration and setup stuff using a tool like this to be able to help them along the way. So it could be agent. I don't mind Agent Explorer. I was varying a little bit away from DevTools because I see this, the overlapping concerns with administrators are very high. And so I wanted to make sure that we didn't sort of exclude that use case just because in sort of this single package, I think we can serve, both IT administrators and developers quite well. I wasn't going to make it a top level Hyperledger project, just, and it could be a lab, I guess.
Given how many repos we're going to create, I actually like the idea of a Ares lab where it's like,
so yeah, go ahead. To talk a little bit about project structure here. It's typical that if something's a standalone framework or tool for multiple frameworks in its own right, then it may be its own top level project. If something belongs as part of a broader tool set inside of a particular protocol or a particular project, it's better to manage that within the project itself because it really reduces the amount of logistics that have to be handled. And if it doesn't quite fit or you're not sure if it fits within the project yet, it's best to start it out in the lab to make sure that you can build the kind of community that you want to build. So in this case with this tool, I think it's either a full legitimate part of Ares, obviously because of the functionality it has and what it does, or it's a lab because the community here doesn't know whether they want it yet or not. So, you know, I'm not picky about whether we do it in Hyperledger Labs or whether we do it in Hyperledger underneath Ares proper. My guess from what I've seen so far and the reaction it's getting is it's probably just generally part of Ares.
Yes. That was kind of my original thought, but I'm very open to some stuff here. The other things that we're interested in is, and there's some conversations that I need to have and so that we can figure out a good way to work together with the BCGov team. As I get closer, I'm not doing anything special. I'm just sending, you know, DIDCOM messages. But there's a bunch of functionality that exists in the REST API that I would love to expose through this. And so we should talk and figure out what we can do there to make that happen. So and what our options are. But anyway, that's kind of all I had to really show today. I say this, and then I'm going to be actually on vacation all of next week. So I will, in the notes, I'll post the link to the existing repository. And then anyone can, of course, start from there, or we can, you know, contribute stuff together and work together if you're interested on the project. I'll pause for any final questions, and then I can quit demoing and we can talk about other stuff.
Hi, this is Leonard. Sorry, I'm in a noisy environment, but this makes a very good exploration tool. Can't go to Mars in it, but I think it'll certainly explore the Ares ecosystem very well. So thanks, Sam, for putting it together and all the participants. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I'm going to continue to work on this as I mix in with other projects. I have had minor success in getting it to build, actually, for an executable. But this is my first time navigating a project like this. So I got a Windows built version to actually run. But when you bring it up, it doesn't actually do anything, which is not as effective as I'd like. So I need to figure out what's going on there. But I'll keep working on this. And any help here would be very, very welcome. Okay, so let me knock that off. The next thing on the agenda that we want to talk about was I should share this again, is the issue credential RFC. I know, BCGov, you've been working hard on implementing this as close as you can. And it would be really nice to be able to move this forward so that we have a less moving target that we can head towards. This topic is also scheduled to be a topic of discussion on tomorrow's DIF storage GPU working group call. And sort of trying to figure out how to pass credentials in the interop project that they're working on within DIF. And so it's kind of timely relevant for any changes or things that we need to make to this. I don't have a list of things specifically to talk about this, but I wanted to bring it up so that we could figure out what we could do to move this particular RFC forward.
So one thing, I would like to mention at the bottom, we talked about it briefly. So if this is just open forum for making suggestions on adjusting this, I would like to get to the place where it's the second bullet there, that we put in a flag in the offer credential that says, that indicates that a previous version of the credential has been revoked. And so this is an offer of a new credential that would replace a now revoked credential.
So it's like a replacement credential.
Yes. So that you have a way to notify, like right now the issuer can revoke a credential independent of the holder, which is totally appropriate. But common practice will be that you'll notify that person that you revoked it. And particularly if you're revoking it because some information has changed and you're offering them a new one. And even when, you know, in generally, I think that's going to be the common pattern. Even if you revoke it for some bad reason, the person did something wrong and they're now no longer allowed to have that authorization, you might have a credential that indicates they don't have that authorization anymore. So in our example of organizations, when a company dissolves, the registries will issue them a new registration credential that says that the status of the company is now dissolved. So proposal, and I was going to put a PR in for this or an issue, and I'm not quite sure which is the right way, but I think I'll just put a PR in it, which just says, okay, let's extend the offer credential message to include probably a flag and a phrase to say that it a true false that says it's been revoked, that this is an offer to replace a revoked credential and the reason for revocation.
Is there a way to identify the one that is replacing?
That could be done as well. I'm not sure if there's an ID on a credential when we get it back. I think there is. So that could be another field.
Hey, Steve, have you considered the concept of a contested credential? So the idea there being that somebody issues a credential and, you know, gets pissed at me or something, revokes it, and I contest that revocation as the holder.
I mean, that's a business process. I don't think it's a technical process. The issuer can revoke a credential at any time without notification to anybody else.
Sure, right? but how's that any less of a business process than the holder saying, I don't agree with that?
True. I just don't know how that would get manifested. I mean
the same way that an issuer would say, I'm unilaterally revoking this, the holder would have the ability to say, well, that's great, they did that, but I'm putting my statement on that as well. Just a thought.
Yeah, Richard points out in the chat that the holder still has the ability to produce proof of the credential. They just can't produce a proof of non-revocation. So the holder can still explain to a verifier, look, I had this, and that issuer went off the rails, but
Well, that's exactly the point, is the being able to explain and not having to do that out of band, right? Because if we're sending these things off, presumably they're not going to an individual who's going to be reviewing them. They're going to be going to some kind of system that's going to check whether or not this is valid.
Yes, and this is Leonard, just very quickly, I agree. These are attributes of the credential as I see it. So status, including the reason as to which the change of status should be carried for revocation, for example. So the replaced credential can reference as a hashed link of some sort the credential that was sort of revoked. So then you have that provenance, and you can trace back to exactly what changes were over time with regards to that particular customer.
There are some data normalization issues there to consider. You don't want a credential that requires it to be updated on a constant basis. You'd rather have a credential that stands on its own, because you're not the one, as the issuer, you're not the one holding it and deciding when and where it's shared. So you're usually best off giving a credential that can speak for itself. And if you can make a credential that you don't have to constantly revoke and reissue, it will make the system a lot more efficient. So thinking of it more like an immutable data object, where you say these, where you state facts and you let the object include whatever natural expiration it would have, will be a more sustainable usability model in terms of the data flow. But it does require you to think a little bit differently than you would if you're thinking about a database that's your typical system of record.
I think the point here, though, is that those concepts that we're talking about are sort of inherent in a specific instance of a credential, like a specific type of credential. You might do this in some types of credentials and do different things. Revocation is something that is across the board with all credentials, the ability to revoke it. And so it's kind of a first-class citizen here versus, you know, different fields that you might have with different statuses and that. So that's why I'd like to include it as part of the offer credential mechanism.
Yes, if I could say here that each instance of the credential as an object should have the same attributes associated with it. So certainly status, the reason for the revocation. Over time, different credentials would have their own, you might say, unique sort of attributes. And that's important, because I think you could have for an organization or individual a credential that can be revoked several times over time. And you might still want to show that provenance over time. So each instance of that object should have its own set of attributes with their own unique values.
Yeah, that's the model we're following. But as I say, as you do that, chances are you're going to, again, you have this first class ability to revoke a credential. And often when you do that, you will want to give the holder a chance to get a new credential that is no longer revoked, that is not revoked, that is represents the new state.
Yes, with the current status as is in that new credential.
So here's an interesting thing that may help us tease out some of this more. So what happens when an issuer goes out of business but doesn't revoke credentials? Do you put that as a status as well?
There's nothing that can be done. Again, come back to what capability have you got. You can still prove the credential. You can still know who the issuer is. So you've got all the aspects of it, and the credential still exists. Again, it comes that scenario comes back to what is the verifier want to do with it. For one thing, for example, they may not be able to contact the issuer to find out who they are and under what authority they issued that credential, because the issuer no longer exists. But that really is outside the realm of credential exchange.
If I could say on this point, we have to look at the use cases for the issuer as opposed to the owner of the credential. So if the issuer is the one who can revoke an issued credential, then that responsibility should lie with the issuer as opposed to the owner.
So to draw out the other idea that Stephen mentioned is that the verifier is probably going to use a couple of different of things to decide if they trust the credential. And even if the issuer themselves are gone, any credentials that were issued to the issuer in the trust framework for you know whatever trust framework applies, whoever issued that one can end up revoking it. So even if someone had both a credential and the a credential from the issuer that they assumingly obtained before they went out of business or stopped operating, then that credential itself can actually be revoked. So there's a couple of different ways that happen there, but again, it's sort of outside the scope of the RFC and the process of issuing the credentials.
I think, can you guys hear me? It's John.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I think what's happening, I was trying to say stuff earlier, but my phone was messed up. We can't confuse the cryptographic primitives that we're discussing with business primitives. And that's what's happening. Like a negotiation between the holder and the issuer is not part of the cryptographic protocols that we're contemplating in the ARIES RFCs. That's a business context. And so whether there's a way people can use the cryptographic protocol exchange to accomplish their business objectives, that's great, but that's not part of the RFC. Right?
Yes.
But is revocation part of that cryptographic level? I think it is. That's why.
Yes.
Well the cryptographic level has to support the business needs.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's no negotiation part. There's no part that says, oh, the holder's upset that you revoked and therefore wants to negotiate. That's not part of the cryptographic primitives.
Yeah, yeah. I think the biggest way for us to remember where to draw these boundaries is that DIDCOM and all this ecosystem exposes primitives, cryptographic and then some, that allows you to create trustful interactions and overlay a social layer or a business layer on top. And it is a good thing to remind ourselves of, but we do need to make sure that the properties of the infrastructure enable that, you know, supports things like revocation and trusted cryptographic credential exchange and those sorts of things. But yeah, the social layer on top of that, I agree. Other than a comment field, you can't go much more detailed than that because that requires some form of social interpretation, I believe.
Yep.
Okay, so the main point brought up, I think, is that should we add to the offer some details that help you identify a replacement credential? The other way that could that you could accomplish the same thing is with a separate protocol. Where that you would use to do so. But if it's you've mentioned that this is a really, really common case. And so it might be worth including that for the streamlined aspects. It's optional, of course. You only use it if you're replacing a credential. But that's your argument, right, Stephen? Is this is common enough that we should standardize it?
Yeah, exactly.
Change of address for your driver's license.
It doesn't matter. It's just that what the use case is, it's just common enough. And I don't know what the other protocol would be except to say, hey, I have a new credential for you, which is kind of like saying, hey, I have an offer for you, which
right.
is why I want to put it in the same one. I don't know what the other protocol would do.
I think the user experience, well, you just notify them that you are, you know, that one's expired and that you here's this other one. But at the same time, putting in the message as you've described, I think leads to a better user experience because, you know, when you're receiving the credential or you're viewing the offer, if you will, you know, the UI can say, hey, this credential replaces a credential that you already have but has been updated. And I think that's a lot clearer of a flow for the human involved.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Would the holder, let's use the address change on a driver's license example. Would the holder use this as well to say, I'm starting a new proof a credential request using this status.
Yeah, this would arrive in the form of an offer from the issuer. And so the flow would just continue from there. Oh, I want that. All this is doing is informing them that it's replacing one they used to have. And by the way, that one you used to have, it's been revoked.
Yeah,
so I guess if you do nothing, you've got a revoked credential and you're at least aware of it.
But I think your question, Kyle, is whether we need the same attributes in other areas in the message flow. And I think the answer is no, you don't.
So what would be the proposed path? Because like what I'm hearing described is this is an issuer initiated update to a credential. And what I was thinking is that there's also the possibility for a holder to initiate the update credential. Because that's
And that could be done with we now have the offer proposal and that could be done that way. As saying, hey, I want a new one with these attributes on it. So that flow still works. The issuer could then reply with, okay, I accept your proposal, if you will. Here's an offer. And by the way, this will revoke your old one.
Yeah, I agree. And that is part of the use case for the holder of the credential. I've made changes, I've dyed my hair brown, I've taken on new premises, I have more square footage. I can now use Apache, which is brand new for entertainment on evenings. Absolutely. So that's part of the holder's use case to request the change of proposal or new proposal or request.
Yeah.
So I'm not.
It's a good question. I think, Kyle, it's a good point that you could flag it on the proposal as well. That's a reasonable. A reasonable point. I'll think about that as I put it. I think the credential is the important one because it's the issuer that can do the revocation. But it could be on the proposal as well. I think that would be work well. After that, I think the flow just continues. So
yeah, I think the way you propose it works just fine. Where the issuer is when they're making the actual request is doing that, it just may make it hard to do state management tracking. So that's where I'm not really sure, but I am agreeing that this is definitely a cryptographic layer primitive type thing because we're changing the cryptography of it.
Indeed, and I think we'll have several iterations to refine it further to get to that ideal state of Nevada, wouldn't we not?
Is there anyone that's opposed to this concept? The reason I'm asking is because if there is some controversy around it, we should put it in an issue first to resolve it. Otherwise, it can just show up as a PR. Is there anyone that's opposed to this? Or that wants further clarification before they agree to it?
Does this create a breaking change on this?
It would be optional. So no,
yeah, optional.
So this would be a minor version rev, to put it in that context.
Yeah. So this would change it to 1.1 credential offer. Now we can get into other topics. Like this would be a 1.1 of offer credential. Would all of the issue credential be bumped to 1.1 or just offer credential if we left it at offer credential only?
I think it moves up. I think it moves the entire family up.
Yeah, I thought the same view was family wide.
Yeah, yeah. So here's the protocol name. This is the protocol version, and that's the message within the protocol.
Yep. Okay. So
it's pretty easy to support because there's only one minor difference, right?
Yeah. I think this should be there should be an issue anyway. So while this is, I just use this as a convenient shortcut because I've been thinking about it and wanted to get it in there. I think there should be an issue raised anyway. I can reference back to this conversation, but for proper flow, and then I'll do a PR that includes updating the numbers, the version.
Okay. We should. This is really interesting because if this is accepted and you're proposing a 1.1. We haven't really talked about how that flow actually happens, whether it's a new RFC created that describes the 1.1, or whether we add notes to the existing RFC. There's a little bit of a flow thing that we haven't really talked about there. I'm the wrong person to talk about flow since I fumbled it significantly in the last little bit, but it's a question worth discussing. For example, we're not automatically accepting the 1.1 just because the 1.0 was accepted. So there's a little bit of a process there we need to
Right. Take. Yeah. Yeah, and as I said, I think that the did exchange one, we've got to figure out where we go from.
I've done some thinking on how I might properly repent for my sins there. And let me be clear about what those are. The did exchange protocol, when I first brought it over, was just changing Indian to Aries. And then we started having conversations about how to fix it, including a rename. And I started making those changes, except that now this was something that was really, we're proposing something new rather than changing something that existed. And so what I should have done is pause, stop there, created a brand new RFC that proposed did exchange. And then, and that was going to be the status proposed and have left the current one in its form. So I'm going to attempt to do that in the next day or two, is to actually, is to have some RFCs that correct that. And that way we can move along using the existing one, but ported from Indy with the language changed. And then we can work on the new did exchange protocol and wait till that gets accepted before we start building it. Now, building it should be pretty easy because it's like the old one, only slightly modified, but I still think it's worth having that travel its own process.
And for the team doing the Go framework, they can still continue on with Did Exchange now because they're implementing a first version of it, and that's totally fine. That it's not, you know, that's their call and probably the right thing to do at this point.
Yes.
But I'm more concerned that there's a whole bunch of implementations that use the connection family, which is being deprecated but still exists, that's for sure.
It does. So we should bring that in as accepted, and then as soon as we really agree to supersede it with an accepted did exchange, then we change the status to deprecated and we move along. And that's the right flow, and I totally did not execute the right flow. So I'm going to try and fix that to be more clear.
I think that's how I ETF does things, because you want to have RFC X, this is implementing RFC X. And if RFC X becomes superseded, then you need to update your implementations.
Yes, but it's still useful to have the old documentation so that someone that's trying to match some older spec still has some docs. And that's what I really, really fumbled when I migrated between.
We don't want incremental versions of an accepted RFC. Once it's accepted, it's not changeable.
Right. Now we haven't, the issue is not accepted, right?
Sorry, a question there, because I do hear what you're saying. This is Troy. I do think it's maybe a little bit more complex than that. So a couple points being, if there's two RFCs who have the same content, but a different name, there might be more of an explanation needed in these texts about the intentions, right? So is the connection spec frozen and not being changed any further, and the focus is now on did exchange? Is it just a copy and paste of all the text, or are we talking about, there's a pointer to the same text and saying this is a different name?
Was my big problem. So, but your point is well taken in that in the status field of the RFC, which they have a status thing at the top right here, there's a status note. And the one that exists but that will be shortly deprecated should have a note here pointing to the new one. And the new one should have a note there that points to the old one so that people can figure out and navigate between them.
Right. But is the old one frozen or... like, is there status for frozen and we're now working on the new one, or how does this interpret?
I think that accepted, it means that people are actually working on it. I think that we could do, and I think that we can update the documentation for clarity or examples or to fix errors with the old RFC. But other than that, any significant changes to the protocol would need to go in a new RFC.
So I think, Troy, the answer is it's frozen, but it doesn't mean it's, like, and this is a bit unusual because we transferred from projects and it's the beginning and so forth, but
okay.
Once you're accepted, it's frozen.
And then you kind of got an, like, we could put a pointer in there saying there's a new RFC coming that's going to supersede this one.
Okay. And for the future, do you always want to handle readings this way, or is this just a special situation?
In some ways, you treat it a little bit like a software release. You have a master version where you're accepting changes, but that's hasn't been tagged for release yet. And what we're saying here is, when we move something from its draft status, we're basically tagging it as a release, and that tag should stay there and should be referenceable going forward. If someone needs a change on a specification, it's okay to propose a new specification, but you certainly wouldn't change the tagged version.
Okay, so
evolving it as a new spec.
Yeah, sorry to beat on this topic. I'm just curious about the process. So if something's in accepted and you want to make a non-minor change to it, is that always a brand new RFC, or are we doing pull requests on the existing RFC?
Because no, I think it's a new RFC.
Okay, so it's always an RFC with a copy and paste of the text?
I don't think so. I would argue differently, but not sure. If you're going to change the name of it, without a doubt, it's a different RFC. But if I'm going to change the issue credential protocol from 1.0 to 2.0, not 1.0, actually, either way, if I'm going to change the version of it, I think we should have a new document created, but inside the same 0.036. And have status to say
there was
that
there's a
new proposed. So the status of the 1.0 would say accepted, and the status of the 2.0 would say proposed. And there'd be a second one saying, here's a link to a new version that's proposed. And then when the time comes, you swap the readmes and update both their statuses.
I don't think that's how RFCs work on the IETF.
And I would also say this process is not meant to be as heavy as a full RFC process like IETF. It's meant to be just as much as we need and no more. If you're looking for kind of guidance on how this works in a community that's very mature, look at the Python PEP standards. It's possible to accept changes to them, but once they stabilize, then the numbers are basically fixed. And any changes would go into a new one, and you would have it replace the old one. There's several communities that follow this process. Python is one, the Bitcoin community has in the past, as well as the Ethereum community. And the Rust community is the one that we've kind of basically taken our process from. So we want this process to feel familiar to the folks who've been participating in those groups, but we also want to make it just enough that it works for us. So I don't think we have to stress too much about the details, so long as it continues to do what we need functionally. And I think what we're trying to communicate with one another here is that we need the numbers to stay relatively static. And if you're making a change that makes a big difference, then a new number helps imply that it's not the same as the old one.
We also need, from a point of order perspective, need to be able to discuss a proposed new version of an accepted protocol. Right, so we can discuss the 1.1 release. In this case, by the way, I don't know that we can go to 1.1. I think, but this is still in proposed status. So we can do things to this that we shouldn't do to accepted ones. That might be a separate point of discussion about this particular protocol. So let's further the discussion after we've had some time to do a little more research about what precisely the process should be.
Well, the other thing here is, let's focus the process as much as we can on the editors and the people who are just changing the spec. Let's not focus on process for process's sake. We don't have to have a described process as long as it gets us where we need
to. The problem is, Nathan, we're bumping up against problems. So, you know, you mentioned you wanted to keep it as just enough, but the problem is we're bumping up against problems now.
Not enough. I'm just worried when we have folks who are not the ones making the pull requests starting to chime in about additional steps or statuses of things that could be added. But as long as it's the guys making the pull requests, this is exactly the right discussion to have.
Well, I'm about to make the pull request to change this one to bump it, so I need to know what I got to do.
And I think what Troy is saying is,
if we can follow best practices protocols, so if Python and several of the user groups have a particular process, as long as it suits our needs, we should follow best practice. That's out there. Unless we can improve on it. Unless we can.
There's lots of best practices. I think what Troy is trying to say is he needs to know what to spend developer resources on. Document's the right one. It has to be that simple.
So what I'm thinking about here is somebody who has been working about it. There's two classes of people who are going to be reading these protocols typically. Somebody who has already implemented this stuff and needs to continue to update. And then there's going to be new people who are coming in to implement and trying to figure out where they need to start. So what I'm thinking about here is there a way that we can group these together? So for example, the connection turned into did exchange. Can we stick those in a folder together? And the readme of that folder is a implementation per version with a change log on it. And then there's also a summary of it. And then you can, you know, link into the RFC versioning and stuff like that. And so then
I was thinking something like that, that there'd be a readme, which is the accepted. There'd be a proposed.md, which is if there is a proposed change, that's the one that's proposed. And that there should be some way of saying deprecated 1.0, deprecated 1.1.md. That would be essentially the readme renamed. So there's always basically that flow. If something is simple, but if other groups already have something, I guess we should follow that, but I was thinking something as simple as that.
Status stays something within the README rather than changing the name. That way, when people follow links, they show up at the right place.
Well, there's always going to be a README. There would always be a README. There would sometimes be a proposed, and there would, and then the README should always reference all of them. Should have a link to all of them that exist.
I think my preference, mostly just for simplicity, is to create a new RFC with the whole new copy of the thing and any changes, of course, that you made to it. And then we reference each other and then deprecate the old one. And that means that we'll move through RFC numbers faster, but I don't know that that's my primary issue. And if someone does show up at an old link, they can still see the status note that it's been superseded and go to the new one. In this case, because it's still in proposed, we can decide whether we actually need to do that or not. But I think generally, if we're replacing an accepted RFC, superseding it with a new RFC is the cleanest, easiest flow to do.
Yeah, I think that's a
Kyle, we only got a couple words there.
Clean.
Then I got half of another one. You still with us?
An example in the first place where it's... Yes.
Yeah, go ahead and repeat, Kyle. We didn't get that.
Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Okay. If it's accepted or active, it should always require an RFC update. Unless it's editorial, because those are making changes to, you know, JSON objects. If it's proposed, I think it's fine to just, you can create breaking changes, anything like that. But I think the more important factor is going to be how we are tracking our change logs. And so I have an idea of that. But I think that's incredibly relevant right now. I think we can unblock ourselves if we do the RFC update. And then once somebody gets one in there, I will make a example and point you guys to of how I get over.
Awesome. I think that some sort of block at the bottom, this might be what you're talking about, Kyle, that points to the RFCs that contain previous versions of the protocol. And that way, from the newest one, you can always find old ones. And from the old ones, you have links to the new one, and you're good to go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Okay. So given this, though, Stephen, what I might do, you can exercise this if you want to. Because this is proposed, what I might do is just change the numbers inside this and then add a change log to the bottom that specifies that in version 1.1 we added the whatever to the message. And I think that's going to be just fine because this is currently in proposed state.
Sounds good.
Okay.
If I remember right, it moves from, at what point do we start building against it? When does it get accepted?
Well, so there's proposed, accepted, adopted, and superseded or whatever the last one is. And the problem is that we started building against this one kind of already, and we should have advanced the conversation to get it accepted before we actually started building against it.
I mean, part of the thing is the author should be the one that is driving the schedule. So to me, it should be, Nikita should say, I want a PR that says this is accepted. And then we have the conversation to say whether this is accepted or not. So there should be a single change that says accepted.
Right.
Now, that hasn't happened yet. So that's why we've got confusion on this one, because definitely people are building on it.
Yes,
yeah, I think that's some true. Of these that moved from Indy to Aries, that chain of person pushing it has shifted. Anybody, are we ready?
Are we ready for what, Richard?
Are we ready for that PR? Can we say it's accepted now?
We could, and then we have a new one to do the 1.1, but I wasn't aware that we were fully okay with this. And the things that I think we need most with this are editorial, but one of the things that has been brought up in other communities is that non-zero knowledge proofs don't actually need the offer proposal loop, and we should make clear that this protocol works if you enter at a particular case that just does the request and the issue.
The text has been updated to that. This picture hasn't, because I didn't have any access to the picture.
Oh, but you did update the text?
Yeah.
Okay, so we could. We might be ready for that. Is there anyone, with the exception of the addition that Stephen wants to add, are there any corrections to this protocol that we feel like we need before we accept it?
I don't think this diagram is immediately obvious that you can enter at that later stage for non-ZKP based credentials.
We just said that, but you're saying that we should update the diagram before we accept it.
Yeah, I would say, and I would probably hold off and potentially integrate the feedback you get from the storage and compute working group as well to see whether or not your presentation there sheds any more light.
It could be, although I'm inclined to say if we need to make some changes to adapt to that, that's in a future release and we move forward.
Okay.
This has been sitting here for a long time, and I would very much like this to become at least something that we can move against now.
So can we, I would suggest that we do somebody creates a PR to do a status update, and then we can also, as we're going through this, figure out, because I'm sure we'll bump into some problems, what it's going to take to actually move statuses. Because we're trying to learn a process here that works for us. That's still lightweight.
Well, and we can move statuses. One of the things that I would request is that we update this diagram. So, Richard, you asked if we're ready for that, and we would love. We don't have the source for this diagram.
Yeah, I'll get that. I was just slacking Nikita for when he wakes up.
Perfect. So, if we could update this diagram to indicate to match the text and the alternate entry points. Then I think that would help significantly. And then we can, it's easiest to accept a status change if the only thing that has changed is the status. And then we discuss as a community whether that's ready. And if we say yes, then we hit go, or if it's obvious to the maintainers. So what we should do is get an update to this that corrects the diagram, and a separate then PR to update the status. And then that's, I think, the quickest way to move through the protocol. And if we did that in a hurry, that means, Stephen, that you would be proposing a new RSC that would end up superseding this one with the 1.1 release and the additional things that you're adding.
Sounds good.
Yes, I agree, gentlemen. All inputs to the process must be up to date. Thanks, everyone. Great meeting.
And okay. I can have Nikita do both of those PRs. This is an interesting case where if we have lots of discussion where we want Nikita as the author of this to participate, then we probably need to move a lot of this discussion to the other call when Nikita is awake and able to participate.
We could, but I think right now we mostly just need to kind of move forward with this one because it's had all the corrections that I believe it needs.
Yeah, that works for me. So I can have Nakia do both those PRs.
Sure. Yes. Okay, good. Any further conversation on this particular RFC? We scrolled a few times, but there were valuable topics to discuss. I'm trying to leave a half Nathan here, maybe a quarter Nathan.
I know that Stephen and Tobias made a point about how the diagram was out of date, but I didn't get that written down in time, and now I can't say it right. Can you say tell me again so I can write it?
Yes, we discussed the ability to enter the flow without doing the offer and proposal loop and just begin and make a credential request and receive it. And this is useful for flows that do not need the cryptographic, they don't have a cryptographic need to do a pre-loop like zero knowledge proofs do.
So it needs to show the path where you begin at the credential offer.
Yes.
Okay.
Hold on. You don't actually even need a credential request though in some cases. If you're an authenticated browser session,
they can't just issue it. So there's an entry here. You're right, Tobias. There's a make a credential request and there's also a make credential issue.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. So if you're pre-authenticated in a browser with the issuer, they can just issue a credential directly based on, I don't know, information pertaining to the authenticated session you have.
You still have to provide the blinded link secret though, right?
In a ZKP.
Not for knowledge ZKP.
But not in a JWT-based VC.
Right.
Or any others.
I think...
As long as you can make a commitment to a known DID at that point, right? So you still have to have some step where you're exchanging whatever link data you're using for your establishment subject.
But in this case,
it's the DID that you already have for the connection. So that's a non-issue in those particular cases.
Yeah, so in certain cases, you might have already done DID exchange with a website or something and linked to your account, and you might be saying, like, issue me a transcript, and they'll just use the DID they know you by in the authenticated session and just issue you a credential that pops straight out the browser or goes to your identity wallet. So at that point, I think at least for the interop project at DIFF, that's potentially one of the scenarios they're considering. So
it is. So you're totally right, Tobias. We have a possible start point at prover to make credential request and a possible start point for issuer to make credential issue. And either one of those can be the start point for the protocol.
And I think, Sam, if you could issue Richard with a very high level description of these proposed changes, so he can represent you and the changes correctly. I think that would help, certainly.
I'll point the key of the recording.
Okay. Perfect. Okay. Okay, any further? Richard, you got what you need?
Yes, I was just thanking Leonard.
Yeah, you're good. Okay.
One last thing. I just realized this is proposed status. I think it's fine if Steven just edits this.
We can, but then we need to wait longer before we accept that. And if we think that that's going to be very fast, then we can. The other move, since if we do the proposed, we don't really have anything that documents the 1.0 version of the protocol.
Well, that's the thing is, if it's in proposed, I think it's fine to do breaking changes. That's my
I know, opinion. Except that this one should not have been in proposed for so long. And so we are trying to figure out how to navigate the messiness that already exists.
Okay. That makes sense. Then just ignore my comment. Sorry.
Okay. Any other comments? Okay. This is good progress. This next one is a whole lot less controversial, I think. This is the transport return route. This actually is the function already implemented in ACA, which is why I'm proposing that we move it from proposed to accepted in order to get messages back when you don't have an inbound route. And so this describes this transport decorator with a return route all or thread and as it exists. The only thing that I can argue that may need to be yanked out of here is to remove the no-op concept. But other than that, I think it's probably ready to go. Are there any comments here?
I still think there's like several points to negotiate on in terms of what I sort of see this as, because transport return route in its current state is talking about like returning messages that might be inboxed by the other side.
It's actually only talking about getting a message back to a response I'm sending in. The inbox concept is good, and we need to talk about that, but it's a wholly separate RFC.
Okay, so is this transport return route putting a request response pattern over DIDCOM?
Yes.
Okay, so I think in order, because you've got queued messages count and...
Nope. That's a totally separate. The only thing that we're assuming is that messages can be sent back to here where there's no discussion in this RFC of where those messages actually came from on purpose.
I've lost you. In this RFC at the moment, you're talking about queued messages count and
nope.
This...
You're right. If we're doing that, then we should rip that entirely out. And so I can remove the queued message count as part of this.
Yeah. So I definitely agree. It's not controversial if you are creating a decorator that is just creating a request response pattern over DIDCOM. Then I'm happy. But if we are doing it in terms of queued messages counts and how we do it for threads and all sorts of different various things, and it impacts on the expected behavior of agents, then I think that's controversial.
You said, what was the last thing you said?
Like, I think if this RFC is just creating a request response pattern.
Yeah, I got that half. It was the very last sentence that I didn't pick up.
If it's got the inboxing and all of those other types of features, I think that has implications around the expected behavior of an agent, and therefore
it does. And so I will remove those so that it's more narrowly focused.
Okay, cool.
And then we can start another one to talk about those concepts. Okay. So any other feedback on this? Okay, I will make the associated changes, and then I will raise a PR with a status change after I've done so. And then we can move this to accepted, because there are existing implementations of this. And I would like to not fall afoul of the same problem with the credential issue. And so I will trying to move this along that way. Okay.
Does anyone else get my mic? I think your mic's unmuted.
Steven.
I'm muted, Steven. He's probably changing rooms. Okay. No, you're good. Okay. Any further comments on transport or turnaround? Okay. I think that was a quarter, Nathan. Other topics that we want to use the remaining 10 minutes to discuss. One of the things that I'd like to bring up is what people think should be in the next several weeks of calls.
I would personally like to talk a little bit about the what's going on with the Interop project and some of the, I think at certain stage, once we get there, Stephen, maybe we could talk about the VC Authent stuff and how that plugs into OIDC. I think that could be a good topic.
Yeah, and I think we should do some more higher level planning too, in terms of what priorities we should be addressing that's most urgent, and their dependencies related to any other, you might say, side or dependent projects on the go. And that would certainly help us determine what goes into each week's topics, so that we can try and keep everything on track and move things along as best as possible.
Leonard, I think a priority discussion is actually really, really good. We're unlikely to all completely agree, but it will surface lots of relevant things that we should be talking about. Okay, so I have diff interop, OIDC, and I have priority discussion. Other topics? I like moving through RFCs, particularly the ones that we think are, you know, the ones that are kind of should already be accepted. I think we should.
I was about to say the same thing. I think we should that's through the ones that people think should be accepted or need to be moved forward. I'm not quite sure what that list is, but you've given me a to-do to look up and see. We've got a list of all the ones that we think we support, but I'd like to make sure that those are all in an accepted state so we know how to move forward. The other thing that I've been raised as an issue is how do we know if we can come up with a mechanism so that people can publish that they have implementations done, so that we will know further about this whole breaking change and making sure we're not changing things without proper notification.
So the Aries, there's an Aries repo that we have in GitHub with almost nothing in it. And I think one of the things that would be useful is to actually stick a list of implementations quite similar to the one that we had in the old Indie Agent repo, where people could self-add, you know, send in a PR that adds updates as necessary to that table. And so that could be a really useful thing.
As for the RFC implementation stuff, I will I can give a presentation on kind of what I'm thinking for management of that inside the RFC repo.
Okay. And one of the things that might work is to like give this a go with what we've decided to do with the credential issue and then see how that goes. Right. And we can, if we need to go back and sort of update docs and things that way, that would be useful too. But I think that this is the first major time that we're actually doing like a version family release, major or even a minor release. And so I think that sort of watching that happen would be really useful and quite instructive. So Kyle, that would be awesome. So what am I going to call that one on the list? Process flow?
Yeah, process flows or I don't know. Just, yeah, whatever you feel like fits your
name. Awesome. Other ideas?
Sam, are you looking for the stuff like Richard has indicated that a discussion on threading model will occur on the morning call? Do you want like a follow-up on that in the afternoon call? Summary or something like that?
I think we definitely could use a summary, and we sort of already have a normal slot in the meeting for that.
Yep. I was going to propose a follow-up once I see how much progress we make as a group in the morning call.
Right. It's always discouraging to report that progress has not yet been made sufficiently. So yes, but we should definitely build that into, and we have an existing slot sort of in the agenda for that. So I'm not too worried about that getting buried. But I started bringing up RFCs because I felt like there was a bunch of RFCs that needed to make progress, and we kind of hadn't. There was a huge burst of transition that was awesome, and then we got involved in lots of other really good topics, but we weren't moving those RFCs forward at a rate that I think is healthy for the community. I think between the RFC one is actually a lot of discussions. There's probably five discussions inside of that. And so I think we probably have enough for now. I think that I will actually be gone next week. And so, and Stephen is going to run the call. So I'll go ahead and create the agenda today, and we can go ahead and form what that is. And then I'll hear what happened when I come back. So I think is there anything else we should be talking about in the remaining 5 minutes? I don't think we've ever ended early, but today might be the day.
So maybe just one more proposition for a topic for discussion for the Twitter calls.
Uh-huh.
I would like to bootstrap a discussion about Internet of Things, like Internet of Things platforms and how the Aries fits into it and what are the consequences of using this, what we are talking about here within the project, using that within such a platforms. Because I know that some folks here are working on some stuff around that, but it will be very nice to dive a little bit more into details.
That would be good. One of the experts in the group is in an awkward time zone. We have had conversations about the fact that all the existing hardware modules to do cryptography available for IoT devices don't support ED25519, but they do support ED, what is the other one? EDSH or EDCH, anyway. We're talking about what we might need to do to the encryption envelope in order to have that as an alternative form of crypto for IoT devices specifically. And so that has come up. So I've added IoT to the list.
could we as well like prepare a kind of recommendation for those who are actually building such a devices to support a specific modules? Because actually this would be very handy.
Sure. I mean, that could all be involved in the conversation. IoT is neat. It's still fairly niche to the conversations that we have, but I think that making sure that all those that are working on it kind of know about each other and can coordinate, I think would be very useful.
Hey, Sam, this is John Callahan. Real quick, I think a future topic would be just a review of the all the SDKs. I noticed most of them, including the Ruby one, still just have license stuff in them, but I'm going to be porting it over soon, following the Python example of, you know, not refactoring the indie name yet from the project and doing that at some date. But yeah, so sounds good.
Another topic that could be brought up in the next call is the new DID method, the ARI specific DID method that we're discussing in one of those issues.
You mean the peer DID method?
No, not a peer DID method. I'm talking about replacing the current DID method in all the URIs for the message types with an ARIES method.
Oh, yes. Yes, that is a good conversation. Daniel Hardman needs to be involved in that as well, and I think he's out today.
Correct.
But yes.
And that should be discussed sooner rather than later, because obviously it'll touch every single one of these protocols.
Right. What we probably need to do is semi-agree on a switch date. I hate to do that, but we're early enough in the community that I think we can probably pull that off. And it doesn't have to be to the minute, but it ought to be, you know, everyone knows sort of what the target date is to make that. It's a fairly small change, but I think that would work well.
And one more thing, the DKMS status, I don't know if Drummond's still on, but that's an RFC, of course, but.
Sam, on that last one, I still have no idea why we want to change those two areas. So before we get a date set, can we understand why we want to do it?
Well, it's not to change it to areas necessarily. We need to adjust the syntax of the protocol names to match the current state of the DID spec. We picked the whole spec status thing a long time ago when the DID spec and then the DID spec itself made some associated changes, and we have not cut over to something that is compatible with what they're currently talking about. I've partially done that on purpose because it was still under discussion, so I didn't really want to change and then change again. So it's really how we identify message types is the short answer of what we need to update.
Oh, that is not what I was referring to, Sam.
Oh, you're switching out the community DID from the one that's currently used?
Yeah, exactly.
The one that is currently used, we can discuss this. This is probably what we need to bring up. There's no reason why the one that's in current use can't just become the ARIES community DID. And you mentioned method. I'm not sure what method works is referring to.
So Sam, I think there's a bigger topic. If you actually want to resolve from that DID, not just have as a predefined identity, does it make sense to be DID documents on the sovereign ledger? And also the perception issues with every protocol message saying DID solve. So I think there's a bigger topic.
So we could definitely change away from that, and we basically need a ledger that actually supports that. So I understand the topic now that you're talking about. Yeah. You're right. It's unimportant that did actually be on the sovereign ledger, but there's certainly a perception issue that matters, or that there's some preference there when there isn't really. So we can definitely discuss what the right location and what the right method is for that, so that we can actually get the DID protocol resolution in place for these common ones. Part of that same conversation ought to be, if you want to develop your own protocol, what are the steps you should go through to register your own such that it's resolvable? That's another topic that is related to that. And so,
well, that is process, gentlemen. So I guess we should have a bucket for processes, one of which is this we are just discussing now.
Well, we should just bring that up as a topic and figure it out. I don't think we need a new process for that. Okay. Sounds good. We're over to, over, so we hit our goal of never being under, which is not a goal. I'm kidding. We appreciate this. This is an excellent list, and we'll draw from this as we move forward in our conversations. And thanks all for coming, and I'll get the recording posted soon.
Now, Sam, you mentioned that some of the people that participate in the IoT conversation are in a different time zone. Is that a time zone that's more compatible with the other meeting, or does that meeting not work for them either?
A morning meeting would work better.
We can definitely add that to the list if that works for Robert. So we can talk later.
Okay.
Sure. It fits perfectly.
Sounds good.
Have a great vacation, Sam.
Hey, thanks.
Thanks, everybody. Have a good rest of your day.
Yeah, thanks, everyone. Have a great day. What's left of it. Thanks. Bye-bye.